You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We're pleased to welcome AP National College women's basketball writer Doug Feinberg, who joins us now after covering this regional or both regionals in Albany. Doug, was it both or one of them?
It was both, Amy. It felt like I was there in Albany for a long time this week.
Well, what was it like to be in the building for this game that was so hyped up and yet exceeded the hype?
You know, I've covered a lot of big basketball games, and the number one all-time to me still is the Arike hitting the shots for Notre Dame in the championship game in the Final Four as far as atmosphere, excitement. This was not far behind that at all. Even though it was a regional final, it felt like it was a championship game. The fans were into it from the start. The players played the way they should. It was an electric atmosphere.
How does the crowd react if you're in the building whenever Caitlin Clark hits one of those crazy threes?
I mean, it was probably 85% Iowa fans, which made it that much more exciting. And they just, it's trying to figure the way to describe it. It's just so incredible because you wouldn't think players can hit shots like she hits, and she does it routinely with no effort, and the crowd just loves it up and eats it up and just gets excited by every time she does it.
Angel Reese certainly is a star too in her own respect. They're completely different players, and yet, man, when she was out there before she rolled her ankle, she was grabbing rebounds, 10 of them on the offensive end. She had a bunch of points in a row that brought LSU back when it first got behind Iowa. How much did the ankle change things from your perspective?
I mean, credit to her for coming in back out and playing. She in the post game said that she's not going to use that as an excuse. She had 17 points and 20 rebounds and was a force on the offensive boards and the defensive boards. I mean, she seemed to be a little bit slower getting up and down the court, and Iowa loves to run, and their bigs got down the court and beat Angel a couple times for layups just because Clark's such a phenomenal passer as well as shooter and scorer. But, I mean, she was playing really well before she got hurt. After she came back, she was still playing pretty well, but I think I was going to win no matter what happened with Angel tonight, the way that Caitlin was playing.
It's interesting because when you think of LSU's journey and the fact that for Kim Mulkey, this is a major accomplishment to return to the Elite Eight, everything they've gone through this season as the defending champion, and not to mention the attention on Angel Reese. Gosh, I didn't realize she has 3 million Instagram followers. I mean, she's in the spotlight a ton. How did you see them navigate a lot of the distractions and adversity that came their way?
Well, Kim is a pro's pro as a coach, and she actually did, I thought, a really good job in a sense of deflecting any pressure from the team onto her, in a sense, with the comments that were made by her about the Washington Post story and then later on about the LA Times story. It took a lot of pressure, I think, off of the kids and sort of circled the wagons for them and got them ready to just focus on the basketball game. Angel said after the game tonight that she'd gotten death threats last year after, I think, they won the national championship, which is awful. I mean, these are kids playing basketball, which should be a fun time for everybody. And to get any kind of death threat is not a good sign for society and as a whole to see a kid get that as a 20, 21, 22-year-old.
Mm. Doug Feinberg is with us after covering these regionals in Albany. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. Well, in light of that, we know that the columnist for the LA Times did issue an apology today. But what was your reaction to his initial version of the story before the LSU-UCLA matchup?
I mean, I'll be honest, Amy, I read the first couple of paragraphs of it, and I was kind of turned off by the idea behind the column. And I'm credit to the Times to actually go back and take some of the stuff out of there. It was really offensive. And credit to the guy who wrote it that he actually did an apology. It's not right that he wrote it in the first place the way he did, but to own up to it, say he made a mistake, and apologize for it, I give him some credit for that. But just, I mean, there were so many things wrong this weekend in women's basketball. That was one of them. That was off the court, on the court. Obviously, I'm sure you mentioned or know about the mess in Portland with the 3-point line being 9 inches too short, which was its own embarrassment. But thank God for tonight, having two great games. The present with Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese, the future with Juju Watkins playing well. That to me is sort of what should be celebrated for women's basketball in the NCAA tournament so far tonight and this weekend.
Considering that every game Iowa's played this year has been sold out, and actually for the better part of 2 years now, including even a stadium where they're playing a preseason game and they managed to sell, 55,000 tickets, something along those lines. They're a major draw. What are you expecting in Cleveland?
I mean, it's sold out. It's you put the Iowa fan base with the South Carolina fan base, with the UConn fan base, and then you have NC State back there for the first time since 1998. It's going to be a really, really great atmosphere. I think it's going to be tremendous for the sport. I think it's going to potentially break some viewership records Friday night. I mean, UConn versus Iowa at prime time. What more could you ask for?
Mm. Doug Feinberg is the AP National Women's College Basketball writer with us here After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. Let's talk about South Carolina. People may not realize that the Gamecocks lost their starting lineup from a year ago and a couple of reserves as well. How did they get back to the point where they're, again, undefeated going into a Final Four?
Undefeated and a team under the radar. Think about that. They're 36-0, and they're kind of not even the main story of the year right now, and they're not the top story in the Final Four. And Dawn Staley, who did a masterful job this year coaching this team, as you said, losing five starters and still having them undefeated and the favorite to win the national championship, just a credit to her and how great a coach she is. And she's exactly there where she wants them to be, not being talked about as much as Caitlin Clark is in Iowa and potentially UConn's going to be. She's happy to sort of be under the radar right now, as she said last night after they won to get to the Final Four. Let people talk about us after next Sunday when we cut down the nets.
Well, what makes them so good again this year?
Well, the young kids, they have a pretty good. Raven Johnson, who last year, if people remember, when they played Iowa, Caitlin Clark wasn't guarding her outside to basically dare her to shoot threes, and she wouldn't, or if she did, she missed. She was in the gym probably about 14 hours a day working on her three-point shot, and she hit a lot of huge shots this weekend. She had a big three when Indiana made their run in the Sweet 16 to turn a close game into about a three-possession game, I believe, and hit another huge shot in the Elite Eight game the other night to get them to the Final Four. So they have outside shooting. Tahina Pau-Pau, who they got as a transfer from Oregon, is another great outside shooter. And they have a great inside game with Camila Cardozo, who said she's actually going to the WNBA draft after the season's over. She's foregoing her last year to do that. So they have an inside game with Cardozo and Ashlyn Watkins, who's a phenomenal defender, athletic, and you have the outside game now. So inside-outside with new players, but really talented ones.
Mm. We know that NC State has both its men's and women's teams into the Final Four this year, which is really cool. But NC State is the team that gets South Carolina next on the left side of your bracket. It's UConn versus Iowa. Let's talk about the Huskies, because even though they seemingly are always there, 23rd Final Four for Gino Auriemma and the Huskies, this was a really unconventional route. How do they overcome all those injuries, Doug?
Well, they probably have, as Gino would say, the best player in college basketball in Paige Beckers. And if she's not number one, she's number two behind Caitlin Clark. So you start with a really good player and a Hall of Fame coach, and you have a chance to win every game. And they're down, I think they have basically played 5.5 players tonight in their win over USC.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, he finds ways to get the team to win. They've had half their team. I mean, I think they have six players out for the year with injury. So he doesn't have that many options left. I mean, if someone gets in foul trouble, There's no one to put in off the bench. So he's just done a great job of fine-tuning what they do have talent-wise around Paige to make them successful. And this might be his best coaching job ever to get this team to the Final Four with so few options to play.
As you point out, they did have multiple multiple young women who were out there with four fouls and had to play that way. They didn't really have a choice. One of the things that stood out in this game is the experience, though. I know that Paige Bueckers missed a good year and a half of injuries, but they did have Aaliyah Edwards out there as well. They got players who have at least been to this tournament before and been on the stage before, contrasted with what you were getting from USC, which was more of an upstart. And then you think about South Carolina, and they lost all of their starters versus an Iowa team. They're not completely intact. They lost a couple, but they do have players who were there a year ago. How much do you think that experience plays a factor?
I think it helps a lot in the sense that if you've been there before, the Final Four is zone bare. There's more media attention. There's more obligations than just stepping on the court and playing. And if you've been there before, you know how to handle it. And the coaches like Gino and Dawn and Lisa Bluter of Iowa, who was there last year for the first time, they have a better understanding probably than Wes Moore does at NC State. It's not a knock against Wes, but NC State hasn't been there. He's never been there. So that may help a little bit of an edge if you need one. But talent's going to win out. And obviously, all those teams are pretty talented, and I think South Carolina is the favorite, but I wouldn't be shocked if you saw Iowa win the championship or UConn win the championship.
So as you think about this year, or even going back to last year's Final Four, when I guess a few people that I've asked have kind of pointed to that as being the time or the moment when America fell in love with Caitlin Clark and with this Iowa Hawkeyes team, and that's really catapulted the sport. You've covered women's hoop for a long time. Why all of a sudden are all these games on national TV? Why all of a sudden are people jumping on this bandwagon?
Well, Amy, I'll take it back a step further. I think when we had the COVID year, when they did the whole tournament in the bubble, so to speak, and people were kind of stuck at home, so they probably watched more basketball in the tournament, more women's basketball.
Mm-hmm.
I think that might have started this, and that was Caitlin Clark's freshman year, Paige Bueckers' freshman year. And then there's the issue, obviously, with the inequities, the weight room problem that Sedona Prince pointed out.
True.
I think that galvanized people to go, hey, let's give this a chance. Let's support the women. And people started to fall in love with Caitlin Clark. And just she's done everything the last 3 years to make you stay in love with her the way she's played. Her flair, her excitement, the logo threes, the dazzling passes. So that's helped. And I think networks have gone, hey, let's put them on TV, on main channels, and see what happens. I think I remember, and I may be off on one number here, but I think either six or seven different networks that had Clark on TV this year had record numbers, record viewership. And that's not a mistake. That's not by accident.
Mm-mm.
That just shows how powerful she is. And then they see other teams play, other players play, and like, wow, these players are pretty good too. So I think that sort of helped turn it from a moment that we saw last year in the finals into a movement that you have now with people are into women's basketball. I can't wait to see what the numbers can be tomorrow from the games tonight. I wouldn't be shocked if it's over 7 million people watch the Iowa LSU game tonight.
Ooh, and last year, the championship had nearly 10 million viewers, so it certainly was attracting eyeballs exactly a year ago. Before I let you go, Doug, because I know it's been a long day for you, I spoke to both Lisa Bluter and Lindsey Gottlieb and asked them this question. How does women's basketball capitalize on this momentum and continue to raise the bar? And I'll tell you what they said, but I'd like to hear your answer as someone who covers the game.
Well, I'll do it this way. When I was in Albany this weekend, I saw more media there nationally and locally covering the tournament in Albany than I've seen in the 20 years I've been doing this. And that to me is a healthy sign that there actually are people who are more interested in covering the sport. And it wasn't for their own ratings, their own trying to find things wrong to cover, the negativity of it. They were interested in watching Caitlin Clark, watching Dawn Staley, South Carolina, watching LSU and Angel Reese. Sure, it helped that there were the headlines with Kim Mulkey, but there was just a media interest in the sport. And I think this weekend helped people go, wow, they're really talented. They're really good. I want to come back and do more of this. So I think that has helped grow the sport. And there's enough young players out there like a Juju Watkins obviously at USC, or a Hannah Hidalgo at Notre Dame, or Madison Booker in Texas, that once Caitlin Clark has gone to the pros, in whether it's one more game or two more games, there's enough young talent that's caught people's interest that it's going to keep going.
Mm. And Angel Reese, too, has to make her decision about whether or not she will return to LSU. Okay, I lied. One more question. Sorry, Doug. How do you like this format where they've got two regionals at each site?
So I love it and I hate it, if that makes any sense. I love it because I get to see eight teams play this weekend, which is great. And two of the teams that I got to cover are going to be in the Final Four in Cleveland next week. I hate it as a national writer because these days are really long. And you go from like covering a press conference, setting up the next day, to covering the biggest game of a team trying to advance to the Final Four. So that's the plus and minus. As a selfish person, from the media standpoint, from the logistics standpoint, it's tough to have eight teams in the city if it's not the right city. I think Albany did a nice job. I've heard Portland did a nice job as far as like the outside stuff, the hotels and that situation. You have to find the right cities to do this in, and that is a big thing for the teams to have an enjoyable experience.
Mm. Do you think that college basketball or the NCAA will consider going back to what they did, or how about just using the format that the men do?
So I know there's talk about, at least for the first two rounds, trying to go away from the home teams hosting. I think that'd be a huge mistake. They have the biggest attendance they've ever had because home teams and home crowds can go to their games. And you saw more students at games this year than I've ever seen before for the first two rounds. The regionals, they're actually locked in for at least the next 2 years to having two sites. Maybe you could find two more sites and expand it back to the four, which I don't know if that's a good idea or not. The attendance was great in Albany. I didn't get a chance to see the Portland numbers. I'm guessing it's pretty strong there, too. So if it's working, why change something that's working?
Gotcha. Good question. And rhetorical, so we'll leave it on that note. You can find Doug on Twitter at Doug Feinberg, F-E-I-N-B-E-R-G, AP National Women's College Basketball writer. Just done with exhaustive hours in Albany, but man, what a treat to get to this Final Four that we'll have next weekend in Cleveland, and so he will be there as well. Doug, thank you, as always, for a couple of minutes. Great to talk to you again.
You too, Amy. Always a pleasure.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.